From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we started out with one immigration story. Now, we want to bring you to another from a different investigation we did last year, looking into migrant children around the world. And part of that was looking at what happens to the kids that cross our border. Close to 250,000 unaccompanied migrant kids have been detained at the border with Mexico over the past 5 years, and they're still coming. Often, they're fleeing criminal gangs in Central America, and a lot of them may qualify for asylum or some other kind of protection. Adults who are picked up at the border are processed by the Department of Homeland Security, but children are turned over to a different agency, the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Everybody calls it ORR. Most kids spend about a month in ORR shelter, and then they're placed with a relative or another sponsor while they wait for their day in immigration court. But ORR is also locking up a small number of these kids in juvenile detention centers, places that look and feel like jails. The kids are held for 2 or 3 months on average, but some are detained for more than 2 years without charges. Tyke Hendricks of public radio station KQED in San Francisco has been following the case of one boy from El Salvador, 16-year-old Pablo Aguilar, who was locked up for 2.5 years.
Pablo's mom, Evelyn, steps out of her minivan and into the parking lot of the Yolo County Juvenile Hall in rural Northern California. She, her mother, and a friend from church left Los Angeles at 2 a.m. and took turns driving for 8 hours to get here.
Sale de Los Angeles, de su casa.
Evelyn's 38 years old. She's in a sweatshirt and a ponytail, a little bleary. I ask her about the journey.
Sí, salimos de Los Ángeles a las 2 a.m.
She says they don't sleep because of all the anticipation about seeing Pablo. Evelyn's undocumented, so we've agreed not to use her last name. But in spite of her lack of immigration status, she walks right into this jail every 3 weeks to visit her child. She tells me she left El Salvador a decade ago and came to California to earn money to support her 2 sons. She cleans houses for a living. She left the boys in the care of her sister, and all was well until something happened to William that changed everything.
William was 16 when I lost him, the same age Pablo is now. One weekend, my sister called and said she had something bad to tell me. She said, "Look, something happened to William. The gang took him. He was always trying to steer clear of them, but they forced him. They disappeared him. As a mother, I have hope that one day someone will tell me if he's alive or not."
2 years later, Pablo set off from El Salvador to avoid his brother's fate. He had just turned 15 when he crossed the Rio Grande and ended up in the hands of the Border Patrol. That was in June of 2014. He's been locked up ever since. This morning, Evelyn is bringing a batch of family photos for Pablo. She flips through them with me and laughs at a shot someone took of her when she was on the phone with him.
Ah, sí, oh, hablando sí. Con él.
Ajá, con mi compañera de trabajo.
Foto de ti hablando por teléfono sí. Con Pablo.
Sí.
Evelyn gathers up the things she can take inside the jail, the photographs, her ID, and her Bible. They always start the visit with a prayer.
Hoy, el día de hoy, con para Pablo.
Pueden esperar un ratito, ahorita vamos para afuera.
Okay, está muy bien, gracias.
When a guard appears at the door, I ask permission to go in, but the answer is no. So I watch through the plate glass as Evelyn and her mother disappear inside the jail. Pablo's one of tens of thousands of migrant children entrusted to the care of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. In any given year, about 500 to 700 of those kids are held in confinement. Advocates say they become almost invisible. Just down the road from the Yolo County Juvenile Hall is the University of California at Davis. At the law school, Professor Holly Cooper has taken on Pablo's case and a few others. We walk through the immigration law clinic where students are reviewing massive files for each child.
And so those two big fat folders over there, what are those?
These?
Yes. How many inches of paper?
I would say it's like probably 2 feet of paperwork.
Holly has focused much of her career on minors in immigration custody, and she says these kids don't have the legal protections they should. Half of them don't even have a lawyer. And Pablo has been transferred around the country so many times that no one has had a chance to build a case for his release till now.
He's been in McAllen, Texas. He's been in Miami, Florida. He's been in Virginia. And he's been in Portland, Oregon. And now he's out here in California.
The government did appoint a nonprofit advocate to speak up for Pablo's best interest. And three times last year, the advocate sent letters arguing that Pablo be released to his mom. But ORR hasn't acted, and Pablo is still locked up.
Without any kind of judicial or third-party oversight, you know, ORR is both the jailer and the person who decides whether the kid is getting out. And that's a really dangerous power dynamic that is developing.
And Holly says that's the crux of the problem. ORR makes decisions about where a child is placed and whether they're released at internal meetings. And the meetings don't include the child, their parent, or their lawyer, if they have one. Carlos Holguin of the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law says that means there's no way to know why ORR is holding a kid. He monitors the government's treatment of minors in immigration custody as part of a legal settlement.
There's no opportunity for the juvenile or the proposed custodian to review the evidence that the federal government is relying on to maintain the juvenile in custody. You know, that is something that no child welfare agency in any other part of the country would tolerate. It's always an open and fair procedure where everybody understands what the evidence is and has an ability to contest it.
But the Office of Refugee Resettlement doesn't recognize courts as a place where children can challenge their detention. And officials say the law permits them to confine kids if they behave dangerously or if they're suspected of criminal activity. The upshot is that kids who have not been charged with a crime can be confined in locked group homes or juvenile jails, like the one where Pablo is held. I'm not allowed to see Pablo, but I get an idea of what his life is like by taking a tour of the facility with Brent Cardall. He's the Yolo County probation chief. He takes me in through the sally port, the double set of steel doors locked and unlocked remotely that prevent escape. He shows me the family room, that's where Evelyn visited with her son, and windowless classrooms full of books where Pablo goes to school. Then we step into an empty cell, the kind assigned to Pablo.
There's a stainless steel toilet and sink, a small mirror, a very small window that they can see out of. But it's a lot of concrete, your normal cell-looking type of room.
After 3 months of requesting an interview, I finally get to speak with the person who oversees ORR's unaccompanied children's program, Bobby Gregg.
I am the Deputy Director for Children's Services in the Office of Refugee Resettlement.
She says the safety of children is her first priority, and all children are assessed when they first arrive, and every 30 days they're in custody. But because those are internal hearings, we have no idea why kids like Pablo are being locked up. I'm following the case of a teenager who's been detained by ORR for more than 20 months at this point and has been moved around the country to various facilities. How would it happen that a kid is detained for that long and bounced around like that?
Well, obviously, I can't speak to any particular child. But as I mentioned, for each child, we're making determinations based on the least restrictive setting for that child, taking into consideration that particular child's safety, the safety to the community, as well as their risk of flight.
Holly Cooper says one of the most difficult things for kids in ORR detention is not knowing when they'll be released.
It's an indefinite custody. And when you start telling kids that, you know, you've been recommended release, you know, your parent could come get you, next week you'll be out, tomorrow you'll be out, and it doesn't happen, we've seen that that can be very psychologically harmful to the kids.
Holly says lots of kids have been given false hope. Kids like Rafael Armenta. She says for months, the Office of Refugee Resettlement kept suggesting Rafael would be released to await his deportation hearing. Then they backtracked over the holidays.
Friday was New Year's. And they called me. I was on a run, actually, of my New Year's resolution to go running. And I got a call and I said, you just need to tell me one way or the other. We need to know. He needs to know. He's calling me 8 times a day. And they said, we're denying it.
Then there's another reversal. In February, Rafael is released. I race back to the Yolo County Detention Facility, where he hugs his mom for the first time in 7 months. And they walk out into the parking lot. His cousins greet him with slaps on the back. Rafael tells me he thought he'd never see this day.
I thought this day would never get to come, but it came.
When they told you you were going to get out and then you didn't?
Oh, I have a bad reaction to that.
Tell me about that.
I'll go in the room and just do some inappropriate things, like hit the wall and stuff like that.
Juvenile justice experts say ORR's secure detention may not be intended as a form of punishment, but it is punishing by nature. And Holly says being locked up with no clear end date can lead some kids to harm themselves or even attempt suicide. I asked Bobby Gregg at ORR if she was concerned about the psychological toll of prolonged detention.
We're very mindful that this is a special population with special needs. Having said that, we're also very mindful of our responsibility as their custodian while they're in care to make sure that if we are going to place them with a sponsor, that we feel confident from our background check that this is an appropriate placement.
The afternoon is almost gone when Evelyn comes out of the juvenile hall. After her visit, she tells me Pablo was glad to see her and happy to get the photos. Their faith in God keeps them going, she says, but it's not easy.
I'll be honest. I walk out and part of me is still inside. I want to take him with me. I want so badly to take him with me. I go and half of me leaves, but half of me stays here.
Evelyn will return in 3 weeks' time. She and her mom and her friend from church will drive through the night, 400 miles up the length of California, and she'll keep coming back until the day when she gets to take her one remaining son home with her.
That's Tyche Hendricks with KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. She's the author of The Wind Doesn't Need a Passport, Stories from the U.S.-Mexico Borderlands. After we reported the story, Pablo was released after 2.5 years in jail. He lives in Los Angeles with his mother and grandmother. He's waiting to be granted asylum. Reveal plans to keep coming back week after week, each time sharing with you the latest our investigations have turned up. But we can only keep it up if we have the support from you to make it all possible. At the end of every Reveal episode, I say there is always more to the story. And part of that is you, the role that you play in keeping us going. Here's how to do that.